This week, we continue the conversation about a ritual and its importance and the meaning as we read a piece from a New York Mason. In it, he reveals secrets of past rituals and rites, what those rites of passages do for modern and contemporary society, and mostly, he lays bare one of the greatest threats to craft Freemasonry. Then we'll hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison as he tells an amazing tale of Sammy, a master mason who does some incredible things, and later on, it turns personal. We'll wrap it all up with a brief discussion on the idea of balance, equilibrium. Where does the word come from? What does it mean? And as we think about the practical application of the concept, how can we utilize that thinking in making our lives better? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 508. Thank you to our contributors, our fellows, producers, and of course, our legacy partners for assisting in bringing us Masonic education week after week, month after month, year after year. If you want to know more about how you can support the WCY podcast and bring Masonic education to millions of people all over the world, maybe beyond, go ahead and head on over to WCYpodcast.com. That's Whence Came You, WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show and see how you can help us out. Other ways to help us out, of course, is the shop, where we've got some limited edition items, unique items, truly, and some neat Masonic books that we've released. Only available here and, of course, through Amazon.com. But if you get it on the website here with us, you also get an autograph. So that's fun. If you're listening to this on the 16th, then I'm going to be at Homer Lodge in Homer, Illinois. I'm not presenting, but guess who is? Illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison is going to be there, and he's going to be doing his presentation, Freemasonry Crosses the Mississippi. I'm super excited. I haven't seen this. I've read the book, so I'm excited about it. And I hope to see you there. It's going to be a really cool event. If you're listening on Sunday, maybe come down. You're going to want to message Darren. I don't know what the RSVP situation is like, but if it gets too crowded, don't expect a dinner. I can tell you that. But maybe you can come in for the presentation. So should be really cool, really interesting. Next week, I will be presenting in Atlanta. I'm flying in on the 19th, flying home on the 20th. And when I get home, then I got to go do a third degree for a lodge out here in Illinois. So that'll be fun too. Really busy, really great week, but looking forward to some quality time with my brothers here in Illinois. And of course, out in Atlanta, I'll be doing a presentation on the Ark of the Covenant and Freemasonry. So we'll cover a lot of cool history, some books, and all kinds of neat stuff. I also wanted to mention that recently somebody asked me about an Illinois Lodge of Research table of contents, like a searchable document that would tell you what page everything is on in every issue of the transactions. It doesn't exist until now. I'm creating it at the request of Brother Fisher, so thanks to him, I'm going to be doing this, and then we'll go ahead and get that up on the website. So if you're out there and you belong to the Illinois Lodge of Research, cool. Expect this little addition to the members section soon. I will say it is a pretty intense project to come and to do this, but it is going to be well worth it. What is the Illinois Lodge of Research? Well, it's a lodge of research, and guess how much? It's only $10, so head on over there, fill out an application. If you're a Master Mason, put that information in, pay your $10 via the PayPal link. That's it. Then you get to access all the member transactions and stuff. But yeah, open to Master Masons. So that's what we need to do. Make sure you're a Master Mason before you go ahead and do that. Speaking of publications, the Illinois Masonic Education Committee has come out with something we call the Lyceum. It's a magazine based on Masonic education for the Grand Lodge of Illinois. It'll be a publication there. Really exciting to be able to put some of this stuff together and share news of a Masonic nature with the Brothers of Illinois. Every Master Mason can have this. So we're going to work hard to get that to all of the constituency here in the Grand Jurisdiction of Illinois. If you're a Master Mason and you're interested in getting that Lyceum, Maybe there's a way we can work out something where you can download it somewhere. Maybe it'll be on the Illinois Freemasons website, which is ilmason.org. So speaking of magazines, recently I was talking with Brother Darren Lehners, and he's kind of suggested that maybe there should be a WCY magazine. Now, what would it be? I mean, prints of Masonic articles from Midnight Freemasons, unique new pieces, and all kinds of other stuff that we can kind of cobble together and put it into a neat publication. But I just don't know. I don't know. Does that get you guys excited? Would you guys go for that? Let me know what you think. Probably digital only. But I just don't know of a printer who would print it and then handle distribution and things. It's a whole new world that I'm not real sure about. But there would be a cost, probably nominal, right? But free to producers and legacy partners. But I want to ask you guys, what do you think about this idea? Would you dig a digital magazine that you can open up on your iPad, maybe through Issue or something else like Scribe? Or do you just want a print magazine? Let me know what you think. And, you know, this isn't something that'll be around the corner. It's probably a ways down the road. But, I mean, if there's a want for it, then maybe we can do it. So let me know. I'll look for those comments and things right there in the Facebook page and on Craftsman Plus as well. So with all that, let's go ahead and get into the education this week. Now, I actually had a piece locked and loaded that I really wanted to read for you all as a follow-up to the episode we did 2 weeks ago. On August 1st, we released an episode number 506 called Masonic Repetition and Success. And it was about how the repetition of ritual makes you learn. It keeps your mind fresh. And then by doing it and saying it over and over, you actually become that thing. You kind of change the way your brain works. And so that was really fun and exciting. And there was actually a supplemental piece that I wanted to read, but I just didn't have time in that episode. And then, of course, last week we did the Masonic Muscle episode with a special guest, Cesar Rubio, which I want to thank everybody out there for your kind comments, your awesome comments, even some of you who thought that it was too much and too far. It was a aggressive episode, but in my opinion, it was kind of refreshing to be able to just talk with a brother who also sees things in the vein of success and the way I've looked at them as well, but also somebody who is established in this ideology who actually speaks very well to the topic. So if you missed last week's episode 507, Masonic Muscle, check that out. If you have not listened to the Masonic Muscle podcast, definitely check them out too. A link to them is in the show notes from episode 507. But this week, there's an article that comes off of the Suffolk Masonic District, where the sun first rises on New York Masonry, Ritual, Its Importance and Meaning, by Worshipful Brother Victor G. Papo. Here we go. Ritual takes many forms. It may consist of simple routines which an individual submits to on a daily basis, or it may be of a more complex ceremony, as in marriage, graduation from a civil or military organization, or a rite of passage from a boy to manhood. Rituals, to which I would like to speak, concern the genuine and profound mysteries of Freemasonry and its effects on the psyche or consciousness of man. Just how important is symbolic Masonic ritual to the well-being of the individual, and to the craft indeed, to society itself? Why do we, as intelligent and rational people, submit to arcane and perhaps what some may view as outdated, obtuse actions? What significance, if any, do they hold? The issue of ritual, its meaning, and importance is relevant today perhaps more so than in the past. Our global society, ever expanding, becoming homogeneous in nature and activity, is more concerned with the acquisition of material and the temporal satiation of the five senses than the search for meaning and its own soul. I would submit that this moment in history is more important than any before, as a society once divested of its soul, its roots, becomes dangerously unsustainable and has the potential to destroy itself through ignorance or imbalance. Freemasonry, as a truly ancient institution, must be the vanguard of ritual, enabling its members, providing them with a positive sense of worth and of value. Indeed, Freemasonry properly functioning sustains its brethren and the society in which it operates. Ritual and meaning. In Western cultures, we find technological advancements and the ever-present material hunger of the consumer, cultivated and perpetuated by advertising and effective marketing, the normal pattern of our existence. As an organized society, we seem to be displaced or unconnected to our spirit, the sense of who and what we are, why we are here, and what we are supposed to be. More and more, we find young people unconnected to any particular positive, spiritual, religious, or social activity. Thus, young people feel alienated and disassociated with the rest of society. We find the rise of gangs and the violence permeated by them due perhaps to a lack of focus or direction, and this desire to be part of a group is evidence of a natural inclination to feel part of a larger whole. Ritual is especially important for young people as it provides them with a sense of connection to a larger world. Think of the macabre initiations of the urban youth of Los Angeles, which demands a ritual act of murder or similar violent act before privilege or membership might be granted. Important or profound activities which may cause a person to transcend his or her former thinking or pattern of behavior and cause them to enter new planes of understanding is miserably lacking in contemporary society. Carl Jung wrote, quote, "Modern man does not understand how much his rationalism, which has destroyed his capacity to respond to numinous symbols and ideas, has put him at the mercy of the psychic underworld. He has freed himself from superstition, or so he believes, but in the process he has lost his spiritual values to a positively dangerous degree. His moral and spiritual tradition has disintegrated, and he is now paying the price for his breakup in worldwide disorientation and disassociation." Anthropologists have often discovered what happens to a primitive society when its spiritual values are exposed to the impact of modern civilization. Its people lose the meaning of their lives, their social organization disintegrates, and they themselves morally decay. We are now in the same condition, but we have never really understood what we have lost, for our spiritual leaders unfortunately are more interested in protecting their institutions than in the understanding of the mystery that symbols present. In my opinion, faith does not exclude thought, which is man's strongest weapon. But unfortunately, many believers seem to be so afraid of science and, incidentally, of psychology, that they turn a blind eye to the numinous psychic powers that forever control man's fate. We have stripped all things of their mystery and numinosity. Nothing is holy any longer. In the ancient world, in Persia, Egypt, and Greece, the lesser and greater mysteries were bestowed upon the candidates through secret language. Rituals of initiation, passing, and raising. Ritual was considered holy and the primary way that communication between humans and powers beyond immediate human existence, the transcendent, were conducted. One did not approach the transcendental powers casually, but through a careful preparation, purification, special clothing, ritual movements and gestures, speech, visual representations, and group interaction. Initiates were passed into a world unlike anything formerly known, a new sphere of existence, to a new dimension of awareness. Greek drama is said to have had its origins in the initiation rites of Dionysus. Egypt's prototype for initiation was Osiris, and the Persian mystery religions of Mithras had their own 7 degrees of initiation. It should be observed, the word mystery might have 2 distinct meanings. There were the mysteries of ancient times, such as the Pythagorean, Orphic, Eleusinian schools, where ceremonies were conducted in secret and certain philosophical knowledge as well as signs of recognition were revealed to the candidate. There were also mysteries of the ancient building trade guilds of the Middle Ages, where tradespeople coveted their techniques and methods. With respect to our modern mysteries within the craft, we certainly do not pass along knowledge of projective geometry, proportional mathematics, and the laws of irrational numbers to our candidates. So much is information rooted in symbolism, which pertains to a philosophical morality, a custom which has its roots in ancient times. Though our modern mysteries may not be so transparent as some materialistic or rational Freemasons may prefer, ideas and symbols of far older streams of Hermetic philosophy are still evident. True ritual should provide the means by which an individual can grow and transcend his immediate environment. Ritual should be a positive experience, which reflects the harmony and unifying principles of nature, of the great architect. Ritual provides us with purpose and meaning in all that we think, speak, and do. In 1867, the great pioneer of Egyptology, Lepsius, wrote, quote, "The Book of the Dead, or the collection of the texts relating to the resurrection, the judgment, and the life in the other world, was, in its essential character, a book of practical instruction. Its aim was to inform the individual, intent on his spiritual welfare, about what already on earth should be known and prepared by him for his death, end quote. Aristotle once said, quote, those undergoing the mysteries should not learn, but should be affected, suffer, or experience. I am not suggesting that modern Freemasonry is a lineal descendant of those ancient mysteries found in the numerous ancient Eastern or Western cultures, but is inspired by them. The revivalists of 1717 built upon ancient myths, wove symbols and allegories derived from the symbolism of King Solomon's temple. The etymology of the Tibetan word for initiation is conferral of power, and within Tibetan tradition, three assumptions are made with respect to initiation. One, the hall or room where the initiation takes place is the pure realm. Two, the Lama directing the initiation is the primordial Buddha. Three, the initiates are receiving secret oral traditions. Quote, indeed, initiation, as we see from descriptions from both Asian and Western traditions, alludes not to knowledge but to a particular state of grace. To be initiated is to be introduced, to receive what rational thought may not understand. One may be in a state of grace and be thoroughly unfamiliar with theology. It is to be united and linked with primeval or natural forces, thus to be religious in the proper sense of the word. Religion, Latin for religare, meaning to rebind, is to be imbued with spirit. Masonic ritual. The Encyclopedia of Freemasonry states, quote, ritual, the mode of opening and dosing a lodge, of conferring the degrees of installation and other duties, constitute a system of ceremonies which are called the ritual. Much of this ritual is esoteric, and not being permitted to be committed to writing, is communicated only by oral instruction, end quote. Knowledge of ancient rituals, in as much as Freemasonic rites are written, can be possessed by those who seek to learn its secrets. There is much that is contained within these rituals, but to an outside observer, it certainly would not be understood as one who has experienced it. Its modes of symbols, words and allusions to sacred geometry, cosmology, living and dying, or renewal. I recall a particular Brother Barry Jones who spoke at a Masonic educational workshop and who recounted his visit to Germany and his experience of Freemasonic initiation there. He explained portions of their work, which culminated in the initiate being asked to look into the volume of sacred law, and there being a mirror placed upon it. The candidate, seeing himself, was given an explanation that all the secrets were to be found within himself. How does Freemasonry make a good man better? I would venture to say through one avenue, its ritual, which is a pathway to inner growth, to self-knowledge. Quote, God said, let there be light, and we find in our degrees that phrase which presupposes the expansion of the light of the consciousness. Carl Jung, in Lending Explanation to the Archetypes of Initiation, comments, those rites of initiation, quote, relate to particular phases in the life of an individual or of a group, and unless they are properly understood and translated into a new way of life, the moment can pass. Initiation is essentially a process that begins with the rite of submission, when we enter the craft in our entered apprentice degree, followed by a period of containment, the fellow craft degree, and then by a further note of liberation, the master mason degree. In this way, every individual can reconcile the conflicting elements of his personality. He can strike a balance that makes him truly human, and truly the master of himself, end quote. Some disturbing trends in Freemasonry today which we find concerning our ritual are all the way in one day, an exercise which puts a large group of people through the three or more degrees. Another is the deliberate intent of a certain Masonic body, a North American phenomenon, to capture members from directly off the street in order to directly attack the problem of diminishing membership. Another concern is the need or relevance of memory work. There are efforts to ratify the work, to simplify or delete aspects of it. All of these issues are a result of one thing, ignorance on the part of Masons who have no idea at the essence of what the craft is and what its ritual represents. Ritual must never be subservient to money or membership numbers. Ritual must never be changed in order to accommodate people who will never try to understand or appreciate its philosophical intent. Masonic ritual must be probed and understood from a psychological and historical point of view in order to understand or appreciate its vast dimensions and great depths. To be sure, many of our members have not only a lack of understanding as to what ritual is, but they lack proper training to make degree work the empowering transformational experience that it should be. Ye have heard of the style of continental or South American masonry in which a candidate passes through one degree per year, the standards being very high, the education of a mason very detailed and relevant to his becoming a master mason. Some Freemasons today comment upon the need to make entry more difficult and more challenging, thus elevating the standard. Professor David Stevenson, in his Origins of Freemasonry, writes, quote, "Craft religious order of fraternity almost invariably includes some element of ordeal, suffering, fear, ridicule, or humiliation, and themes of death and rebirth were common. The functions of the ordeal were mixed by making the transition from one to another difficult. It stressed how important the change was and increased the value of the status sought. The harder it is to gain entry to a group, the more desirable it becomes. Moreover, those who had to suffer to gain entry were more likely to be strongly committed to the group they had joined than they would otherwise have been," end quote. And further we find, quote, "The fact that all had in a group had to undergo the same type of initiation served to create a strong bond between them," end quote. It is very interesting to find the emphasis on memorization as a communication method being as important and pervasive today as it was in the remote past. Memorization as a vehicle or characteristic of ritual, as one of the seven liberal arts and sciences, can be recognized as a technique being used to improve the capacity of one's memory. In ancient Greece, the application of the art of memory was found to be, quote-unquote, of particular value to orators and lawyers in memorizing long speeches, but was also seen as being of much wider application in the ages before printing and indeed before widespread availability of a medium on which to write. A capacious and well-organized memory was regarded as central to education and culture," end quote. To memorize a speech, a student created in his mind a complex building with all manner of rooms furnished with images and symbols and fixed locations. He would then move through each room in a sequential manner, in turning moving through a particularly crafted speech. Quote, "In the ancient world, the art of memory was classified as an aspect of rhetoric, but Cicero himself, an advocate of the art, classified memory as one of the three parts of the virtue of prudence, the others being intelligence and foresight. In the long term, this had great significance for the art of memory, for the virtues defined by Cicero, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, became accepted in the Middle Ages as the four cardinal virtues, and having fashionable prominence in operative and or speculative masonry, thus in time, the art of memory, identified with prudence, came to be regarded as an aspect of ethics. The work of St. Augustine added further significance to memory, for he regarded it as one of the three parts of the soul, the others being understanding and will, and taught that through exploring the memory, men could find a memory image of God embedded in their own souls. What had begun as a utilitarian technique for improving the memory had come to be seen as being of importance in religion, not just as a valuable method of imprinting religious truths on the mind, but also as something that in itself had moral value and would lead to a knowledge of God," end quote. The man who is generally recognized as having the honor of being the creator of modern Freemasonry is William Shaw, 1550-1602. Appointed master of the works by King James VI of Scotland, Shaw, in his second code of statutes, suggested that, quote, "all masons be trained in the art of memory and be regularly tested in it," end quote. The art of memory was widespread throughout Renaissance Europe, and no doubt influenced the later development of speculative Freemasonry. It is curious that echoes of this practice, though the technique itself may be forgotten, still remain, as the few members who exhibit the ability to deliver long ritual passages are recognized and coveted. Today, Freemasons do not question the ritual content of 3 degrees itself so much as the delivery method, the actual need for memorization itself. This is a modern cultural development and will no doubt continue to be debated as an issue in an age where the volume of information exponentially grows and time constraints abound. There is much in our ritual that can be found as having connection to the ancient mysteries of remote cultures and also potent psychological meaning. For example, we find the winding staircase of the second degree as a symbol for the raising of one's consciousness, moving upward, whether it be an image of a staircase or a symbol such as Jacob's ladder, or symbolism relating to climbing a mountain to the pinnacle signifies that Freemasonry is a progressive science, and our rituals and symbols serve this end. The rite of circumambulating around the altar connects modern Freemasonry with the ancient mysteries in which formal procession, which alluded to the course of the sun from east to west, was made with the right side of the body next to the altar. Circumambulation was from the west to the north, to the east, south, west, and then north again. Such ceremonies of circumambulation were common in ancient Greece, Rome, among the Druids, and the Hindus. In the ancient Mithraic mysteries, which stretched from Asia Minor through Central and Southern Europe to as far west as England, we find the symbolic pictorial representation of stars and constellations. The figures which accompany the Tauroctony, the central figure, Mithras, portrayed killing the bull, are the snake, bull, scorpion, dog, raven, lion, and a cup, which academics have recently viewed as having parallels in groups of constellations which are visible at certain times of the year. The bull is paralleled by Taurus, the scorpion by Scorpius, the dog by Canis Minor, the snake by Hydra, the raven by Corvus, the lion by Leo, and the cup by Crater. In addition, the star Spica, or Spica, the wheat ear, the brightest star in Virgo, parallels the ears of wheat, which are often shown in the Tauroctony, growing out of the tip of the bull's tail. The sun, the moon, the zodiac, the planets convey images of the cosmos and played a central role in Mithraic ritual. Observe the Freemasonic ritual of today that inculcates symbolically astronomy is that divine art by which we are taught to read the wisdom, strength, and beauty of the Almighty Creator in those sacred pages, the celestial hemisphere. A principal component of Masonic ritual involves discourse upon one of the seven liberal arts and sciences, astronomy. The lecture of the Fellowcraft degree eloquently states the need for a candidate to be cognizant of the phenomena arising from the annual revolution and the diurnal rotation of the earth round its own axis. To be sure, the delivery of the lecture ensures the need for the adherents of Masonry to recognize the important and rudimentary astronomic concepts as in the formal ritual of ancient times. Ritual brings the candidate to the realization that he is part of a vast, intricate web of nature and its creator. As a cautionary note, the candidates who are not necessarily motivated by learning all the details of the lecture or fail to pay respectful attention to will not gain anything out of the rituals either emotionally or intellectually. The great respect and attention at ritual being a vehicle for discovery, be it concepts of cosmology, the rotations of the planets and the cycles of the cosmos, to the changing of the seasons, had tremendous significance to the initiated who acted in harmony with the universe. Indeed, the structures or the sites of sacred places the world over, be they the Neolithic structures of Stonehenge, England, or Newgrange, Ireland, the Nazca lines of Peru, the Egyptian pyramids of Giza, or the temple at Karnak, the temple of Athena, the temple complexes of the Aztecs, the Cambodian temples of Angkor, or those of the Hindus, were all constructed with deliberation and reverence, employing practical knowledge of materials, knowledge of astronomy and geography, sacred geography, and imbued with a knowledge respecting the sacred principles of geometry, the use of the golden section, for example, that man, his actions or his construct or his constructions, the world and the universe about him must all harmonize with the great architect and his universe, is an extremely ancient idea and finds expression through the Hermetic maxim, as above, so below. Ritual always has been and must continue to be the roadmap by which universal knowledge and philosophy revolutionizes man's spirit. This is ritual's importance, and this is its vital meaning. We find within the third degree allusion to death and renewal. Parallel to the Masonic rituals, the ancient institutions of Persia, Egypt, Greece, Rome, the lesser and greater mysteries instructed neophytes in the great cycles of time and the natural world as taught through astrology, synonymous with astronomy and philosophy. Perhaps ritual may also serve psychological function, as we may find reference to psychological death to which St. Paul spoke of when he remarked that I die daily. Indeed, a process of dying to oneself. Perhaps this may be thought of as an allusion to dying to the sensory world, a world of empty temporality, and the gradual cognitive growth of a larger dimension in which one plays an intricate part. Rebirth must be preceded by a symbolic death. The drama of death initiates growth and renewal. Again, a very ancient ritual enacted today in our craft. Though the concept of death may contain far less esoteric or psychological intent, as Masonic scholar Bernard E. Jones writes, quote, "What more natural than the young Mason should die to his apprenticehood and rise a master, What more appropriate to symbolize this than the legend of Hiram? Let it be remembered how many legends we possess of apprentices losing their lives immediately after executing their masterpieces. There are stories of the apprentice pillar of Roslyn Chapel, of the apprentice widow of Rouen, and the apprentice bracket of Gloucester Cathedral, of the apprentice minaret of the mosque at Damietta, and others. The truth behind those legends is probably that the apprentice did die as an apprentice immediately after executing his masterpiece. In each case, says Speth, it was the masterpiece that entitled him to promotion. Conclusion. I tend to think that when most of us enter the craft, we respectfully submit to the demands of membership and its unusual ritual without immediately reflecting upon its meaning. Few ever make the effort to realize the historical and philosophical dimensions of Masonic ritual or what it may impart to an individual. I submit that this is most dangerous, especially when we desire to change ritual caused by our fast-paced culture. To make it easier to memorize or deliver more effectively may harm the essence of what the ritual is, Freemasonry's heart, mind, and spirit. One must shudder at the prospect of brethren who have no conception of the immense breadth and depth of ritual, its meaning without the context of its deep connections to the ancient mysteries of centuries past, to the several streams of Hermetic philosophy. How could these people be allowed to, in their blind ignorance, change portions, words, gestures, steps of this or that ritual or degree? This is not to say that our work may not be changed or enhanced, but it must be done consciously, respecting what has been done, what was and has been. It is said that ancient York Rite ritual done properly reveals curious floor patterns which demonstrate Hebrew letters and hence have a connection with Kabbalistic philosophy. I won't comment either way about such things, but it certainly demonstrates to me that our work, its words, or perhaps every movement of the floor patterns are fashioned with profound richness and intent. Our ritual, then, like the great cathedrals of old, erected by reason, with purpose and clear utility, is by virtue of design meant to connect us to some quality deep within ourselves. We are the vanguards of sacred knowledge, and we must submit to caring for our ritual in the midst of a world that is increasingly disconnected with the past, disrespectful and cynical of such rites, materialistic and rife with religious fundamentalism. Our symbolic ritual is a legacy handed to us from our ancient past to be carried into our future without change and without deletion, with strict and caring observance. It ends with a quote. That which constitutes the essence of heaven, earth, air, and water, and that which embraces the life of man as well as that which the fiery God creates in the whole world, I, Philosophia, bear all in my breast. End quote. Albert Durer, Nuremberg, 1502. Mind blown. So much amazing stuff within this article. I really loved it, every moment of it. But a couple of things that I found really interesting in this piece that I think maybe stood out, I wanted to highlight in the midst of the reading, but I didn't want to interrupt it. So here are a couple of pieces that I thought were just amazing. One, he explained portions of the work which culminated in the initiate being asked to look into the Volume of Sacred Law, or the VSL, and there inside of the book was a mirror. What? How crazy is that? Now, I've heard about a mirror on the altar before, but in this instance, we are caused to look inside the book and find a mirror. Really interesting. Carl Jung's complete quote within this piece I found just fascinating. I won't read it again, but it was just on point. And how about this quote about making the transition from one degree to another as difficult as possible increases the value? Does it? We've heard a lot of things about the retention of members and activity of members, and that it's really no different when looking at who came through in a blue lightning all in one day kind of thing versus who went through traditionally. So one begs the question, is it truer? Is there something we can't actually measure there? In fact, that's the first question for our Craftsman Plus. Can we measure drive? Can we measure a Mason's passion? And how do we do that? Now, the last part of this article that I just loved was his explanation of something that I think a lot of people never think about. And this is because it's kind of a Renaissance idea. It's when the apprentice always dies. And the apprentice dies because he becomes a master. And so that in and of itself is somewhat of a profound idea that perhaps you all would agree with. Now, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Is a dishwasher one of the appliances in your kitchen? My guess is the answer is yes. These days, they're almost a universal part of every household. But your parents or grandparents may not have been so fortunate. The first commercial dishwashers made for home use were unreliable, leaky, temperamental gadgets that most times created more work than they saved. In a nutshell, they didn't work. Until, that is, the dishwasher came along. Sam Regenstrief had quite a track record. Born in Eastern Europe in about 1906, he moved to the United States with his family 2 years later. He studied at Indiana University, then transferred to the Baum School of Engineering in Milwaukee, staying there until the school folded. A series of jobs led him to Rex Manufacturing in Connersville, Indiana, where he began to make his mark. Rex, a supplier of steel refrigerator cabinets, was in serious financial trouble. Sam turned the company around and by the age of 29 was running the show. Instead of just manufacturing refrigerator cabinets, he soon had Rex making complete refrigerators and selling them to, among others, Philco. He did such a good job, Philco bought Rex and made it a subsidiary with Sam as president. A few years later, most thought Sam, by then a Philco corporate vice president, was on track to become its president. Instead, in 1958, he left the corporate giant, went back to Connersville, and started his own company called Design and Manufacturing, better known as D&M. There, he earned his Dishwasher King title, transforming the household dishwasher from a piece of near junk into the modern appliance most of us use today. That alone would be enough, but there's more to his story. Sam Regenstrief was a Freemason, a member of Warren Lodge No. 15 in Connersville. He was raised October 28, 1948. Fueled in part by the same strong humanitarian principles inculcated in the craft, Sammy first provided for his family and then became a generous philanthropist. Among his other endeavors, in 1969, he founded the Regenstrief Institute, an internationally recognized healthcare research facility. In turn, the Institute developed the Regenstrief Medical Records System, a progressive, comprehensive patient care data collection system. For this, he has had numerous medical facilities named in his honor. Even when Sam was still at Philco, Brother William Denslow listed him in his iconic work, 10,000 Famous Freemasons. Brother Sam Regenstrief passed away January 17, 1988. Looking at his accomplishments would not reveal how humble his beginnings really were. Shortly after his birth, a fire destroyed his family records. He never knew what his birthday was, and remarkably, he was never sure where he was born. His family said Romania. Sam himself once wrote he was born in Austria. Throughout his life, he proved those things really don't matter that much. The cliche is true. It's not where you start out, but where you end up. Sam valued his employees highly and maintained a good working relationship with them, including my father. You see, in 1969, he bought the company where my dad worked and served as a corporate officer. He was always warm and congenial with my dad, who called him Sammy. me, I called him Mr. Regan Street. Now, years later, I have learned I can also call him Brother. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Well, all right, how about that little piece of almost, well, not almost, it is personal history for Brother Steve. And I just love the story about somebody like this who just happens to be a brother who is also just so successful in life and brings so much greatness to the world around him. Now, if you want more of Stephen L. Harrison, you're listening to this on the 15th or the 16th. Well, you better get to Homer Lodge, as I mentioned earlier. If you don't make that, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on the bookstore, and find yourself some Stephen L. Harrison books that you'll read. And as you read them in your head, I guarantee you, Stephen L. Harrison will be reading them to you. His voice will just echo in your mind as it reads. It's awesome. So check it out. I hope you guys really enjoy. Also, head on over to the YouTube channel where we have his videos that he's produced for this. We're just putting the audio in here. He's actually got a nice slideshow with this as it moves along through pictures and the narration. So head on over to YouTube, click the subscribe button, enable your notifications. That way you get every video as they come out. Now, something that was within that last piece was this idea that popped up in more than one paragraph, and that idea is balance. So what is balance? Well, some synonyms for balance is equity or harmony, tension. Tension is considered, it's like a bad thing, but tension is also good. It ensures equilibrium. Something that is not in balance would be like inequity or imbalance or inequality, unevenness, instability, non-composure, balance. What does it really mean? Well, one of those words that we see in the thesaurus for balance is this idea of equilibrium also. So where does equilibrium come from? It's got the etymology dictionary says equilibrium is a noun. It comes from 1600 and it means a state of mental balance. Mental balance. So here we're talking about not physical balance. We're talking about mindful balance. So think about this. That is the beginning of the word, is a mental balance, and then the word is used in ritual, which means in ritual it means mental balance. I was looking around the internet for ideas about how to talk about balance a little bit more. You know, I go to my favorite websites to look up things. You know, of course, I find some really awesome stuff on astronomy.com about Earth's energy. Its budget is out of balance. It's talking about when heat in doesn't equal heat out, Earth sees change. So it's talking about global climate change, not impacted by man, but the natural course of things. If you're interested, it's a great article. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But Masonic balance. Let's think about it practically. And to do that, I'm going to read this piece called Freemasonry and, quote-unquote, Just Enough, by Midnight Freemason guest contributor, back before he was a regular on the Midnight Freemasons blog, Randy Sanders. Randy says, in Kabbalah, we find the pillar of beauty balancing the extremes with just enough of each to bring harmony and balance. This balance is explained by Eastern martial arts artists, especially internal kung fu practitioners, as the harmonious interplay of opposites. And in Freemasonry, we describe wisdom and strength coming into balance by way of beauty. But why just enough? I believe this remains a lesson for me and many of us finding ourselves taking on offices, tasks, and responsibilities within Freemasonry. We need to focus on just enough in balancing our 24-inch gauge, in keeping circumscribed in our passions, and especially in remaining square and level. I sometimes find it difficult to remember the Masonic lost word of no when asked by respected brothers to step up and take on additional responsibilities. Personal growth means opening ourselves to the new, to the stretch goals of finding a way to do more in our lives. But how do we push that goal to be better every day, to expand our minds and to take on these additional challenges? I want to succeed in my every task. I want to exceed all expectations. I competitively want to be the best Grand Exalted Poobah Commander Emperor that the Masonic world ever saw. But that's the rub, isn't it? Freemasonry is showing us a lesson in ego into which too many become trapped along an extreme of one side or the other. The pillar of too little is the other extreme, as idle hands are the devil's work, reminds us. We find ourselves passively sitting on the sidelines or declining invitations. We take on responsibilities and push away others, making excuses like lack of time. This important downtime or time for recreating yourself refreshes, heals, and refocuses. Finding a means to structure our downtime is maybe more important than how we focus on our projects of responsibilities. We balance away from too little, not by simply taking on more responsibility, but by actively pursuing recreational options. A walk in the park, a nap while watching NASCAR, and creating playtime with the children or family members. All makes for refreshing options to give us a reprieve from the pillar of too much. The lesson of balance becomes just enough in a world of declining membership and consolidation. When we take on responsibilities, it feels difficult to keep our heads above the water at times. An officer in this line, a secretary of this other body, committee memberships, Grand Lodge responsibilities, taking on other Masonic responsibilities, and suddenly, all the meetings pile up like a bad multi-car collision. The difference is, we can do just enough and be completely successful. We should do just enough to be completely successful. Does that mean dues cards come out late again this year? Of course. Does that mean minutes get posted a few days after the meeting and not directly afterward? Sure. But they get posted, dues cards are sent. I'm not saying ignore deadlines and due dates, quite the opposite, be responsible to those expectations. The business of the craft gets completed, ritual learned and delivered, maybe imperfectly, but better than last time, and we do just enough to get the job done. That's how we keep this fraternity moving forward. That's how we bring more good men into the fraternity. With a stretch, if we all do just enough by keeping our lives and Freemasonry in balance, we will continue to be successful. Brother Randy Sanders. Now, this was written when Brother Randy was a lodge education officer in two Missouri Blue Lodges, a co-librarian of the Valley of St. Louis, secretary of the Academy of Reflection, and an active York Rite AMD Mason. Gee whiz, he's been all over the place, and he does even more now. But he manages, he balances, and he does a lot. And we thank him for all his work. And speaking of the work, this week, we just finished the prep work. Now the real work starts. I want to ask our Craftsman Plus the second question for this week, which is, are you doing just enough? Are you overworked? I'd love for you in the Craftsman Plus, as a response to the writing prompt, to tell us to share every office you have in Freemasonry of which you have an expectation. And then tell us the one that's your favorite and the one that you would drop if you could, if your mind would allow you to let it go and just be assured that that organization will be okay. Somebody else, let's say somebody else could come right in and pick it up and take it off with it and you wouldn't have to worry about it ever again. Which one of those responsibilities is it? Now, the hope here is to be reflective, to be honest, and to share. And we'll find strength in each other's words, and maybe we can help each other find some better balance. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for coming with me on this educational journey. I want to thank all of our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for everything that they do week after week. Again, if you want to learn how to help this program out, head on over to the website, wcypodcast.com. Click on support the show. Check out the options there. We've got a lot of great stuff that you can buy. All of the things support the show, Amazon links, all that stuff. But again, we can't do it without you. And it's because of you we get this show out every single week, 50 weeks a year, 50 episodes a year. We're always here for you. So with that, I want to thank you all once more. Take care. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.